Alt NPR.
The following is an excerpt from Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything. For more information, visit toeradio.org.
The events of September 11th convinced me that it's time to get serious about my lifelong dream of being a stand-up comedian. I got a haircut and I bought some new clothes from Filene's basement, and I packed up a suitcase and I hit the road. I'm driving west. I have the radio tuned in to National Public Radio. I try to concentrate on what's happening, but it's just too confusing. The bunker-busting bombs, the smart precision bombs, the individually wrapped peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. It's all very difficult to understand. Why a bomb in a sandwich? Why not just a bomb? Or a bomb in something more American, like a bomb in a Big Mac? Or a bomb in a Coke? I drive through a lot of towns, but none of the comedy clubs are open for business. Most of them aren't even open. Most just have a big American flag draped over the front door with a note saying, "Closed until further notice." Finally, just across the Ohio border, I find a place where it's happening. Bob's Comedy Shop. The place is packed. The tables are filled with couples drinking tall, stiff ones. I find the owner and introduce myself. I tell him that I'm a stand-up comedian. He motions over to the stage. "Show us what you got then, kid." I brush off my clothes and muss up my hair. Then I walk onto the stage and whip out two orange box cutters from the front pockets of my jacket. "Nobody move!" I shout as loud as I can. The silence is deafening. I didn't figure on that. I'm prepared for gasps of horror or murmurs of astonishment, even screams of terror. But not silence. I'm totally thrown off. Then all of a sudden the spotlight clicks on, blinding me. I drop the box cutters and cover my eyes with my hands. A glass hits my right shoulder and explodes. I can hear people pushing back their chairs and getting to their feet. Then a bottle hits me in the head and knocks me to the ground. Hands grab me by the ankles and the hair. Someone tries to pull my fingers from my eyes, but I lose consciousness before they succeed. When I come to, I'm laying in an alley. I'm naked except for my jeans, which have been wrapped around my head like a turban. I stagger to my feet. There's a door next to the dumpster. It's open. The door leads me into the back of a decrepit hotel. I walk down a dimly lit hallway. It stinks of stale cigarettes and the carpet is faded and worn. I stare at my reflection in a large mirror. I am covered with blood and bruises. Someone has carved the word scum into my chest. Then, out of nowhere, a woman appears. She's wearing a flowing black dress and she has flaming red hair. Everything is still hazy, but it's clear that she likes me. She has a small silver dagger hanging from a chain around her neck. The blade disappears deep into her cleavage. It's like the sword in the stone. She holds out her hand. "I'm Raven," she says. "We're in the West Wing. Come, follow me." I take her hand and she leads me through the halls of the hotel. As we pass through the lobby, two elderly couples stare at me with bifocal bug eyes. Raven leads me into the elevator without saying a word. But once the doors close, she explains to me that if I'm going to leave the conference area, then I'm going to have to put on some pants. She strokes my bruised and swollen genitals. "Don't think I don't admire your mutilations. It's just that the hotel staff is already looking for an excuse to kick us out." For the rest of the elevator ride, she just runs her nails up and down my chest, muttering about how much she's always wanted to meet me. When we get to the fifth floor, she leads me to a large conference room filled with five people. There's a banner hanging from the chandelier with the words Death Rally 2001 spray-painted in big black letters. Look who I found, Raven trumpets. Everyone oohs and ahs as she leads me to the front of the room. A man with what looks like staples embedded into his face and shaved head starts bowing at my feet. Scum! 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 Everyone chants and claps their hands. I smile, even though it hurts. A tall blonde woman holding a riding crop embraces me. Oh, Scum, I'm so happy you're here, but unfortunately I don't think this year's convention is going to be anything special. Almost everyone is canceled. No one wants to fly, no one wants to talk. Even our guest of honor, Michelle Finet, isn't coming. I'm afraid this year's death rally is going to be a disaster. Jessica, Raven says admonishingly, bite your tongue. One of the world's most reclusive, subversive artists has blessed us with his presence. And you want to tell him that he's wasting his time? Raven slaps a black folder into my hands and pulls me away from Jessica. You can stay in my room, Scum. It's 5:07, at the end of the hall. Why don't you go get settled and then you can join our first panel discussion that begins here in 15 minutes. She puts a key into my hands and leads me back into the hall. No fair, the man with the stapled head mutters. He should stay in my room. When I find room 507, I collapse onto the bed. The folder contains informational literature and an itinerary for Death Rally 2001. Death Rally is a convention held every October when the natural world is withering and wilting away. The trees, the flowers, the long warm days. Death Rally is a time and a place for the community to come together and celebrate death with fellowship and camaraderie. Flipping through the literature, I learn that the community is made up of artists, writers, and performance artists who consider themselves, well, out there. The fringe. People who write vampire porn, people who make cyber death erotica, people who perform media terrorism. The subversive and the absurd. That's what Supreme Mistress Jessica calls us. There's a special note from her included in the folder. She says that the events of September 11th make this year's death rally strangely inappropriate, but yet extremely urgent. How will 911 affect the subversive community? How will you respond to these terrible events through your art? What will the future hold for us? These are some of the questions we'll be discussing at Death Rally 2001. According to the itinerary, I've only missed the opening ceremonies. Today, I have the opportunity to attend readings, panel discussions, and a body-piercing workshop. I call down to room service and order up a robe. They send me up a long pink fuzzy bathrobe with matching slippers. I put them on and walk back into the convention room. Everyone looks embarrassed for me, but nobody says anything. There are more people now. Two more. A couple dressed in matching black leather motorcycle outfits. And when Jessica drapes the name badge around my neck, the woman throws her arms around me. Oh my God, I don't believe it. Scum, I'm Jenny Oswald and this is my husband Jason. We're the ones who teach at Northern Idaho State College. We use your work in our classes. I've even been reprimanded for it. I can't believe I'm meeting you in the flesh. Raven guides me to a chair at the center of the long table at the front of the room. You're our guest of honor now, Scum, she whispers in my ear. So just let me know if there's anything you need or want. She takes the seat next to me. The man with the staples in his face rushes past Jessica and takes the seat on my other side. There are now nine of us sitting at a table facing an empty convention hall. I'm George, the staple guy says. His teeth are filed down. They look like tiny, sharp rat teeth. I'd like to thank everyone who's made it to this year's death rally, Jessica says, addressing the empty room. We're going to start things off now. Our first panel discussion will be about what 911 means to this community and how we as subversive fringe artists will respond to and comment on the tragedies. We have a very special guest this year, someone who totally surprised us with his presence. The one and only Scum. Everyone claps. I pull my thick fuzzy bathrobe close and smile. It doesn't hurt at all anymore. Why don't we start off with some introductions, Jessica says. The academic guy in the black leather goes first. I'm Jason Oswald. I'm a writer, and I also teach English at Northern Idaho College. A lot of the themes that I deal with in my work have come to life in the past few weeks. Terrorism on American soil, biological weapons being used, police state-like legislation being passed in Congress. I'm reminded by something that Philip Roth said in 1968. He said that what was going on in the real world was far more interesting and far more important than anything he could put into his fiction, and it really made him question the relevance of what he was doing. And that's sort of how I feel right now. I'm at a loss for words. I write postmodern speculative fiction, but it seems to me that the real world has the edge right now. Art is supposed to be there to help people deal with real life, but right now I don't see what I can do. And with that, he bursts into tears. His wife pats him on the back. I'm Jenny Oswald, she says. I also teach at Idaho College. I'm also a painter of subversive imagery. And I must say that, like my husband, I too am at a loss for words right now. But I'm also very scared. Many of us here are part of what some call an aesthetic jihad. We're part of a network dedicated to storming the walls of official culture. We're terrorists in a way. Some of my art has even been described as such, terrorist art. I've always liked that word, terrorist, because as a fringe artist, I know that the only way my work will ever make it into the mainstream is by force. And when I say force, I don't mean blowing up buildings with airplanes. I mean force as in forcing the gatekeepers to take me and my work and my audience seriously. I have to force them to accept me and give me access. Unfortunately, though, I think we're going to have to stop using the word terrorist for now. But I think we can still use the word guerrilla. I think we can safely say that we're guerrilla artists. And in a way, we're more like guerrillas than we are like terrorists anyway. Terrorists attack from the outside, whereas guerrillas come from within. Everyone starts applauding at this. Jason stops crying and stands up. I'm a guerrilla, goddammit, he shouts. George pounds his fist on the table and howls like a monkey. There is not a single person in the audience, but yet we are carrying on as if we're speaking to a full house. This portly guy with a Fu Manchu mustache goes next. I'm Bob. I'm a graphic artist, and I'm very, very afraid right now. I think it's going to be a dangerous time to be a wacko. I'm afraid that the authorities are going to take advantage of this new climate and have us all locked up. Homeland Security. Doesn't that sound like something from a Philip K. Dick book? Everyone murmurs in agreement. Then Jessica introduces herself. I'm also having a hard time working, she says. But I'm at least trying. Last night I tried to write a story that incorporated 911 into the plot. I wrote a story about this guy who gets picked up by this chick in a bar in New York, and it turns out that she's a witch, and she ties him up and does all this stuff to him, and then when he wakes up in the morning, he finds himself in one of the top floors of the World Trade Tower, and he sits up, and he sees the plane coming straight at him. It's still a work in progress, though. That's pretty good, George says. I'd read it. Everyone nods in agreement. Then George clears his throat and waves to the empty room. Hi, I'm George. I do guerrilla art. I also write fiction. And for me, 911 has been a total shot in the ass. Man, I've been real productive. I did this series of posters with the towers crumbling, with all these things you could see in the smoke, like McDonald's arches and Walmart logos, church spires, ads for Clorox bleach, nudie models. And I'm almost done with a freaking novel. With all this talk about the coming wars between the Muslims and the West, it hit me that this is the race war that people have always been talking about. And when I started thinking about it, I got this idea that the universe is really the fallopian tube of some woman, right? And the Earth is one of the eggs. And all us people were the sperms. And see, this woman, she must have had sex with like a lot of different guys. That's why there are so many different kinds of sperms. I don't know why there are so many kinds. I mean, I'm not calling her a slut or anything. Maybe it's like a bad situation or something. Maybe Miss Universe is like a sex slave somewhere or a gang rape victim. Or maybe she's just a nympho. I don't know. But in my novel, one of the sperms has finally figured out what he has to do, you know, to make contact with the Earth. He's like this Osama bin Laden type character. And that's why war is breaking out. It's like a mystery sci-fi philosophy book. George stares at me with puppy dog eyes. It's obvious that he wants my approval, but I'm at a total loss at how to express that. So I just smile and nod. Then it gets strangely quiet. I realize that it's my turn. "Hello," I say slowly. "I'm glad to be here with you all. I've always wanted to attend one of these death rally things. But well, you know how it is. Work, work, work. That's all I do." I smile and look over at Raven, signaling that I'm done speaking. But they don't let me get away with it. "What are you working on right now?" Jessica asks. "Yeah, let us in, scum." George is practically drooling on me. "Well," I say to the empty room, "I'm working on something very big." "What?" everyone shouts out. "Well, I'm working on this book that has a lot of characters. Insurance agents, FBI agents, airline industry lobbyists, and they all have their own stories about their own sleazy agendas. They're all these despicable people, and they all do despicable things. Then, in the middle of the book, the exact middle of the book, the middle two pages, the planes hit the World Trade Towers, and all the stories come to a standstill. All the characters just watch TV for two pages. And then, for the rest of the book, all these sleazy characters and all their sleazy stories continue. They continue to do the despicable things they do. And in fact, for a few of them, it's even easier. Because they just use the excuse that they have to do what they do to help fight terrorism. Even though that's not true. "I don't get it," George says. His jaw hangs open and I stare into his gaping rat teeth mouth. "Yeah, scum, how is that subversive?" Jason asks. "Well," I say, "it's subversive because it shows that nothing at all is going to change because of 911. In fact, things are only going to get worse." Nobody says anything. I turn bright pink, pinker than my fuzzy bathrobe and the matching slippers. Then Raven starts talking. She introduces herself and goes off about how she's worried that the authorities are now going to use 911 to crack down on the alternative sexuality movement. She says she's having nightmares of the cops raiding one of her bondage orgies and shooting the people with leather masks on for being terrorists. I push back my chair and get up and walk out of the room. Nobody calls out after me. I take the elevator down to the lobby. There's an old woman standing in front of a window. She's staring out into the darkness and the fog. I walk over and stand next to her. I'm scared, she says. Me too, I say. I reach over and take her hand, and we watch the encroaching darkness together.
From Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything. For more information, an audio archive, and a blog, visit toeradio.org. Also, visit the Public Radio Exchange, where the Theory of Everything got its start. You can too at prx.org.
Alt.